If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
So the guy that we're partnered with on this $42 million project has historically for the last 35, 40 years been funded by some of the largest REITs in the world. So Wall Street has funded him for the last 40 years. So why would they want to work with me? It's the same reason that anybody wants to work with you. They get to know you and they like you.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Hey, Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate you having me on.
Oh, this is great. This is great. The pleasure is all mine. Do you mind giving us just a quick bio?
Yeah, of course. So graduated from Boston University in 2004, dabbled in a couple of sales jobs, got into real estate because I thought it would create some financial freedom, learned very quickly that flipping 1,000 houses doesn't do that. Very active versus passive, which is now what we do. We own a commercial real estate investment firm. We do private equity, institutional grade type of deals. We have about $150 million of assets under management now. So we own multifamily and self-storage complexes around the Southeast and Midwest. And that's the shortest bio that I think I could give you.
Man, no, I love it. I love it. There's a lot to unpack there. And, you know, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on, you know, is where'd you start? Where are you now? How'd you get there? You kind of gave us a little bit of that, but can you unpack maybe what you've told us there let's unpack some of that and give us a little more color on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we started in real estate as an agent first and then a broker. And I was actually sourcing deals for other investors. So I was finding REO type properties and I was trying to find them good deals and I was watching them flip and make money. And I was like, hey, you know what? I think I could do this. I'm doing the hard work of finding the deals. So maybe we'll start flipping some houses. And we grew from, you know, doing, I think we did 16 deals in 2016, 2017. We did just over 125 deals. So we scaled very quickly once we decided to go ahead and start doing that. And then realized very quickly that this needs a big team. It's a cash eating machine. Even the wholesale side of the business was big team, a lot of systems, a lot of processes, and you're spending a lot of money on marketing to find deals. So, you know, we did okay. You know, we created the active income from that business, but then we realized, you know, the wealthiest people don't create a job for themselves. They start creating businesses that they can invest in and create more passive income to create some more generational wealth. And we started looking for some mentors and saying, hey, you know, how do we find those types of deals? Maybe we buy 100 single family houses and rent them out. Maybe we buy a duplex. Maybe we buy some quads. Our first project was actually a 1,193 unit self-storage complex that we built ground up, a $12 million project, took it out of the ground, run by CubeSmart now. It's about 70% occupied as of today and still leasing up every day. So, you know, as you can tell, we're jump and grow wings kind of guys. And that's kind of what we did with that first project.
Yeah, my goodness. That's ambitious. Most people don't say, all right, well, I'm going to start in self-storage. I know, let's build 1,200 units.
Right.
nor do most people flip 125 deals in 1 year. I mean, did that include wholesale or was that just active flips?
No, both wholesales and flips.
Right. Either way, it's still a lot of people. It's a lot of processes. It's just a lot of stuff to manage. What did you do with that business? Did you sell it? Do you still own it?
We did. Okay. We sold it.
Good for you. What did it take to get that sold?
Well, we kind of had the market cornered here in New Jersey. So, you know, we just called some of the guys that we were wholesaling to and we said, basically, we don't have, I was told multiple times that a wholesale and flip business isn't saleable because you don't really have an asset. But I think we did because we had the buyers lists, we had the marketing templates, we had kind of the systems and processes and that was saleable. So we just reached out to some folks that we knew that were running similar businesses in other states. And we said, hey, do you want to take over New Jersey? And they said, sure.
Wow. Wow. Did you get what you wanted for it?
We did. And we retained some equity. So that business is still going. Every once in a while, they'll call me up and say, hey, I have a great deal. Do you want to buy it? And sometimes it's hard to say no because this market is ridiculous. So yeah, I mean, we'll still do a flip here or there, but we're really focused on building relationships with investors and finding institutional grade sponsors that are running, you know, high level deals. We're actually under contract right now to take down 384 units in Daytona Beach. It's a $42 million purchase price. We're raising about $12 million in equity for it.
Wow. Wow. That's one. Hats off to you guys. You've taken a lot of timelines, and it sounds like you've compressed them. You know, it takes people. I know it took me a long time, and I never got to the 125 deals a year. But
well, it's God and mentors. You know, we really put a lot of faith into just listening to kind of some divine guidance and finding people smarter than us and replicating their systems and processes. So I'd like to say it was us. I mean, we certainly take the action to do it, but it's finding people smarter than us and just replicate what they're doing. There's nothing new under the sun. So we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're just trying to do what looks like best practices in a compressed timeline.
Right, right. I think that's a very succinct way to put that. What looks like best practices in a succinct timeline. That's really smart. You said something earlier. You used the word institutional grade sponsors. I would think that an institutional grade sponsor does not need smaller capital partners.
That's true, right? So the guy that we're partnered with on this $42 million project has historically for the last 35, 40 years been funded by some of the largest REITs in the world. So Wall Street has funded him for the last 40 years. So why would they want to work with me?
Right.
It's the same reason that anybody wants to work with you. They get to know you and they like you. And I sat down with the guy who we're partnering with on this deal about 7 years ago at a Harvard Club breakfast talking about private equity before I was in the space. And I paid, I don't know, $150 that I didn't have to go to this breakfast to sit around a bunch of people that were understanding and doing what I wanted to do. And I sat next to this gentleman. He was eating some eggs and we were just chatting. And I asked him what he did. And he told me he had about $1 billion of assets under management. I said, wow, I'd love to learn how you did that. And now we're partners, right? So now we're going to partner on this deal. This is the first project. We kept in touch. And while we started doing some acquisitions and started doing some deals, I was just keeping him updated. And he would give us some guidance from time to time. And now he was like, hey, I like what you guys are doing. I like your Free From Wall Street podcast. Even though Wall Street has historically funded me, I understand how they make their money. And I know the returns that they're giving to the investors. So I like the fact that you guys are bringing in direct investors, giving them higher returns and not arbitraging like Wall Street does. So he gave us the opportunity and now we're neck deep in it.
Right. Yeah, you are neck deep. You said it's a $12 million raise?
$12 million raise, $42 million project. We're looking at a $68 million exit. So yeah, it'll be a good one.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. That's awesome. Are you nervous about raising the 12?
I'm not. You know, we've raised about $30 million in the past 2.5 years. So we're on pace to do about $1 million a month. We had some dry powder. The last deal that we closed was in November. So we had about 5 months of capital raise. So we had about $4 or $5 million sitting on the sidelines waiting. And then we have some relationships with some guys who started like a fund of funds so that they could participate in deals with us. So they'll bring in $1 million here and $1 million there, and they'll be able to participate with us and partner with us. So yeah, it's I'm not nervous. You know, we really try to figure out, you know, what the timelines are. And, you know, this particular deal is a recapitalization, so there's not a hard and fast closing date on it. The sponsor owns the property. He put his own $11 million or $12 million in equity up to purchase it. So the recapitalization is taking him out and bringing LPs in so that he has liquidity to go find another deal. So it gives us a little bit of buffer, right? It's not like if you miss this date, you just screwed up royally. We're looking to close it by the end of March, but if it has to push into April, I think that'll be fine.
How do you protect yourselves, you and your investors, in a recapitalization scenario like that? I mean, because there's a lot of potential, especially when you're dealing with larger numbers, to have some fat in there that maybe otherwise wouldn't be as fatty of a deal maybe if it were a market deal or something on the street. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really about the partnerships, right? I mean, the sponsor that has owned the deal for the last 2 years, it's really understanding the intricacies of how they operate. Over the last 40 years, they've been dealing with real estate investment trusts and other private equity funds. The good thing about Wall Street, I rail on Wall Street a lot, but the good thing about Wall Street is they really are governed and managed to protect the investor. And these sponsors that run these types of deals that are operating on a day-to-day basis, they give us extreme reporting on a weekly and monthly basis, right. 160-page reports of absolutely everything that's going on in the property. So that's what we're looking for. We're looking for people that have the track record that we can partner with and say, this is what I'm looking for on a weekly, monthly, and quarterly basis. And, you know, when you find newer operators, you know, it's easy to fund those guys because they're finding some deals, they're beating the streets, but do they have the operational expertise that you're really looking for? So the first thing that we do with our investors is we put them in a preferred position, which means that the operators and us eat last. So the debt service gets covered first,
sure.
The preferred returns get paid second, and then us as the operators get paid last. I like that structure because it just kind of puts the investor in front of us. So that's how we protect them. How we protect ourselves to make sure that we're earning a living is we're underwriting the operator, the deal, the market, all of those things, and then really holding them to a very high standard. That's harder to do with newer operators. The experienced operators have been held to a high standard through every market cycle, through every downturn, through every good market. So their consistency over years and decades gives us a ton of comfort, right? And that's how we're protecting ourselves.
Right, right. And I think to your point was that the amount of reporting that these sponsors have to go through as they report back, you know, with the regulatory filings and everything else probably allows for less fat. I mean, there's always potential for, you know, maybe things aren't always exact, but it allows.
Well, everything has to be disclosed too, right? And that's the biggest thing for us is transparency. So when I get those reports, I give those reports right to our investors that invest with us. So, I mean, sure. We have a dashboard and a portal. So they're looking at the numbers. Yeah. Making sure that you can go in and do financial audits and make sure that you can get different accounting and certified and things like that, really keep it above board. And the right people in the industry have longevity. The wrong people, they don't get away with that stuff very long.
Right, right. And I guess I was thinking more on the, in a recapitalization scenario, the original investor had put up all of his own money. And so all he's doing is cashing himself out. He's not necessarily selling the project at a premium. Is that correct? Right?
Yep. He's taking probably about 90% of his cash back out. He's leaving skin in the game.
Right.
Right. And we're bringing the limited partners in for the rest of that. And that way he's cashed up again. He can go find more deals. He can execute on them. Grant Cardone actually does this through his fund. If you listen
right.
to him
yeah,
talk, he always talks about how he's putting his own money up and then right. bringing investors in. That's just called a recapitalization.
Right. Yeah. Understood. Understood. Yeah. I've noted that as well. So, but I was also curious, you know, on that recapitalization, is it essentially assuming, and forgive me for my ignorance, I know we're kind of getting to a rabbit hole here, but is it assuming the same acquisition price?
There's not. There is a premium, but that premium relates directly to how much they've already spent in CapEx, how much they've already spent in rent bumps and things like that. So
right.
it's not market. It's not like if they went out and sold it to a market. It's certainly under market, but we get the benefit of 2 years of operations with. So what's cool about this is what I like the most about it is we're in a post-COVID environment. How do you de-risk an asset? Well, all of these projections and performas are written based on historical data. Well, if that historical data is pre-COVID and only for a short period of time, their projections and assumptions could be off. What I like about this project in particular is that they've owned it for 2 years. They had to go in, they did the unit turns that they were trying to do pre-COVID, and then they walked into a COVID atmosphere, and they're 98% economic occupied. So their proformas and projections are based on historical 2 year data, and more importantly to me, the last 1 year of COVID. So they are achieving the rents in their proforma on half of the units already. So we know that they're actually being achieved and being achieved through COVID. Right now, I think a lot of people are going to be getting into a situation, and I did this on one deal as well, where we walked in. And our pro forma kind of went out the window because COVID, you know, slaughtered the tenant base.
Right.
So, you know, we really needed to pivot, figure out how to, but we lost time by doing that, right? So
right.
in deals like this, you know, I think it becomes how you de-risk the asset.
Sure, sure. Rewinding the last 3 or 4 years, what are some things that you would have done differently?
what we're talking about right now is really being a private equity fund, right? Where we go in, we partner with strong operators, we underwrite the operator, we underwrite the deal, we deploy capital with them. We're investors first in these scenarios. And then we bring in our investor base after we say, yeah, I would put my money in this. In the beginning, we didn't do that. In the beginning, the first two deals that we did was partnering with an experienced sponsor, bringing the capital to it and going along for the ride. And we learned a lot. And then I think we do what a lot of operators do, which is, hey, I need to do everything. Let me go find the deal, operate the deal, asset manage the deal, property manage the deal, or at least manage the third party management team. Well, that's certainly one way to go about it, but it wasn't building the business that I wanted for the lifestyle that I wanted. Mm. I got into this business for passive income. I got into this business to spend more time with my family. And when you become all things to all people, when you become the acquisition guy, when you become the management guy, when you become the capital raise guy, when you're doing all of that, you need to do one of two things: expand your team or spend less time with your family. And, you know, we did a couple of projects like that. We're actually in the process of going under contract on two of them in Columbus. We've only held them for a year, but we're seeing the type of returns that we expected to see, but we're managing those deals. So we're going to sell those deals and we're going to get some of our time back. We're going to turn the equity for the partners back faster. They're going to compound faster, and then they're going to be put into deals like this recapitalization that we're doing, because managing the investors and managing the money is enough of a job than managing the assets and managing the property as well. So, you know, we're of the mindset that many hands make light work. So why don't you just partner with the people that have the experience rather than learning and reinventing the wheel?
Yeah, and that's brilliant. And I love the fact that you dipped your toe in the water, if you will, and then you're like, well, you know what, maybe that's not exactly the way we want to do this. And like you said, becoming all things to all people, I think that's where a lot of us get caught when we just go, okay, we got to grow this thing. We got to grow it, you know, and then it just becomes, like you said, either less time with your family or you grow your business. So then, and you've made your choices that fit your lifestyle. That's really cool. Let's jump into the final four. This goes so fast.
It does. That's all right.
I got so many things to ask you, but we don't even have time, man. This is great. Final four questions are this. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
So it's just find people that are doing what you want to do really well and try to add value to them, right? I mean, if you can find those people that you want to be mentored by and figure out what they need and how to add value to them, then you might get some free mentoring out of it, right? But you're not going to reinvent the wheel. You don't need to look at commercial real estate or residential real estate or anything and go, oh man, I have to figure this out like you're on an island. You're not. I wish I learned that 11 years ago. It took me 4 years to find a good mentor, and then I just changed everything, right? We scaled super fast. We changed how we pay taxes. We learned from people smarter than us. So just get around smarter people than you.
Right, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. What is one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Well, so we run EOS in our business. If you've read Traction or Rocket Fuel, that's based on the Entrepreneur Operating System. So what that does is it makes us meet as a team every week, find issues, root them out, and solve them on a weekly basis so that those issues don't pop up again. So every week we're learning, we're growing, we're trying to figure out how to run a bit better business. I think a lot of business owners are probably just hoping that it's going to get better, but this is real intentional work. We do quarterlies, we do yearlies, and then everything whittles back to a weekly scorecard of how we're doing. And I think that if you're not running a system like that within the business, you're doing yourself a disservice. It makes things very efficient, very effective, and very trackable.
Right. No, that's great. That's great. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, hoping won't get you there. When it comes to giving back, what is one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
So it's actually the crux of our entire business is invest with purpose. We're impact investors first. So in every single deal that we do, we carve out an equity position for a nonprofit. So it creates passive income for them throughout the life cycle of a deal. So in the past 18 months, we've partnered with four or five different nonprofits that will produce about $1 million in giving to just those five over the next 5 years. And every deal that we do, we carve out hopefully a bigger position for the next nonprofit that we partner with. So that's the heart behind the entire business. It's why we do what we do.
Right. No, that's really cool. And I think that's a strategy that we should see more of. You know, bring the nonprofit of your choice in as an equity partner in a deal. That's really cool. And did you have to, Did you have to sell or explain what you wanted to do to those nonprofits?
We just let them know. You know, we send them a letter and say, hey, you've been selected as one of the nonprofits that we're going to partner with in 2021. And we let them know historically what it's looked like and basically ask them for their routing and account number so we can send some checks. It's not a hard pitch, as you might imagine.
When we get off the call, I'm going to send you mine too. No, that's awesome. Good for you guys. That's really cool. That's really cool. Steve, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Yeah, go to integrityhg.com. You can join our investor club and you can see some of the deals that we're working on. You can check out the website, see the nonprofits that we're partnering with. Our contact information is all over the website. So
that's awesome. Steve, thanks so much for your time. Certainly appreciate you coming on today.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.